Houston, standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Started over an hour ago. He's Joe, I'm Jeremy. It's Jeremy and Joe. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So the Astros go out with a dud. Missed the playoffs for the first time since, what, 2016?
He's chilling right now. He's in La Playa right now.
Yeah, Astros are headed to Cancun. Cancun World Series. I like their chances. The Cancun. They're getting hot at the right time for the Cancun World Series.
They are.
They finished 87-75. What was the over-under? I think Willie had it. Was it 89?
I saw from people at different stations that they got it 86.5, so they would have hit it on the last day.
Different stations? What is that?
People that work at different radio stations here. Do you want me to say them by name?
You follow people at different radio stations?
I've worked with everybody. I've been at all three, so yes.
You don't unblock them? Or like,
no. I'm not petty like some of those other people there.
That's what the socialites do. Like, the moment that you, like, you know, you eliminate them from their life, you unfollow
them on the
gram.
There's a couple people at 790 that did that to me, not the
really?
Name names.
No, I don't. I was just teasing. So they hit the number.
They did.
Got it.
They hit the number.
So congratulations to all of you that got the Astros. It was a successful season for everybody. But no playoffs for the Astros. I don't know where you stand on this, Joe, but I'm not calling for heads per se. But at the same time, it wouldn't bother me. I kind of look at it a little bit how we were talking about Nick Kaley Weiss's offense. Like, do you trust? We'll start at GM. Do you trust Dana Brown to guide the Astros back into a World Series contender? Let's call it that. Because let's get rid of the Golden Era conversation, even though I am wearing my Golden Era shirt out of memory, out of homage. Do you trust Dana Brown? Because quite frankly, I don't.
I don't think I do either. Christian Walker, Jesus Sanchez, those moves have been duds. Now, he's done a really good job, I think, with like your bullpen arms, your rotation guys that have come in, like Jason Alexander, and filling the gaps of the injuries in the rotation in the bullpen. I think he's done an excellent job with that. But with the lineup, I'm not as impressed. And look, a lot of that's also injury, like Jordan, like the main guys didn't play one game together this year. I saw Michael Schwab tweet that out, that Jordan, Paredes, Altuve, Correa, all of them never played a single game together this season. So I can't hold that against him. But he also hasn't done anything to earn my trust.
Yeah.
It's just he's just kind of there. He's a body. Like he hasn't made the move that pushes them over the edge. You say Kikuchi was a good move last year.
No, you say Kikuchi.
Who's Kikuchi?
I've never heard that one before. Like, that's a good move. But it didn't pay off for you last year. It didn't pitch in the playoffs. So like,
yeah, I mean, it's all about improving probability. Dana Brown's easily your worst general manager of the last three that you've had.
I agree.
And, like, I don't think that Dana deserves to be fired. Like, that's why I hate to be on the fence. You know, I don't like to be on the fence. I like to be radical, either left or right. Give me some radicalism. I hate being right down the middle. I hate being in the middle of the aisle. But that's where I'm at with Dana because, A, he doesn't deserve to be fired. He really doesn't. The injuries are tangible. Like, I know we don't want to hear about it or talk about it today. The injuries are real. Like, look at the amount of games that Jordan didn't play in 50 games this year. Isak didn't play the last 2 months. Pena played like 125 games and is going to, like, get votes for MVP. Jose Altuve was banged up. Josh Hader didn't play for the last month of the year. Look at all the injuries to the rotation that you had. So, like, yes, the excuses are there, although I hope they don't use those as excuses. And, like, I hope they don't – if they are retained, I hope they don't go into the offseason like, oh, well, it's all injuries. Let's run it back. No. Like, there needs to be a reshuffling of the deck. And Dana has been courageous. Like, he had big bravado whenever he traded Kyle Tucker, obviously. So he does, and like his record's fine, right? Like this is his third year. He's been to the playoffs in two of the three. The only year that he didn't make it, he hit the over, and they had tons of injuries. But at the same time, do you trust him? Like, where does he stack up amongst general managers in baseball? He's not top half. He's far, far superior than Luno. He's superior to James Click, who won you a World Series. Like, if the Astros fired Dana Brown today and re-signed Jeff Luno, what would the reaction in the city be? They would lose their collective minds out of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
What if they fired Dana Brown today and rehired James Click? I think there would be happiness there too. So why I don't think that Dana Brown deserves to be fired, absolutely not. I do think that the Astros can do better, and I don't trust him to get them back to the promised land. And I think that you should look at the general manager job and the managerial job and pretty much every position within the organization the same way you look at, like, the starting first baseman. If you can improve, you do it. And I think that they can improve from Dana Brown, and I think they can improve from Joe Espada.
I agree. My concern is that they're not going to because of the guys around Jim Crane. Like, that's my biggest concern, is that they may make a change in the next 24 hours. I know there are press conferences scheduled for tomorrow morning to meet with the media, but, you know, we're getting the reports that, you know, Dana Brown's got an option on his contract, that Joe Espada is being a team option, that Joe Espada is being evaluated. But do you trust Jim Crane to make the right hire? Because, like, he hired Dana Brown, so why would we believe that he's going to find someone else that's going to come in here and be even better than Dana Brown? Because we haven't even seen, like,
I'm going to push back there.
Go ahead.
He waited to hire him until January or late December, like either late December or early January, because they wanted to be, you know, fantasy general managers for a few months. His first two general manager hires were very good ones. So of the three that he's hired, two have been very good. One has been, look, and I don't think, I'm not going to call Dana bad. Like, that's the other thing. I'm not calling him a bad general manager. I think he's an average general manager. So, no, I trust Crane to hire a general manager, a good one, more than I trust Dana Brown to guide the Astros back into contendership.
I think that's fair, but we also, where I struggle with Dana Brown too is that we haven't, like, he's a scouting guy. Like that's his real forte. We haven't even seen really any of these prospects, like, really come up and be, you know, or have a chance to really develop yet. I mean, he's had some hits with Zach Cole. I mean, Jake Bloss was used in a trade. Obviously, you know, you've done some good with the Cam Smith trade for and moving on from Kyle Tucker, but I feel like he still hasn't really been given a chance.
Yeah, it's too early to tell.
And so it's like if he's good at those moves down the road, like, are we going to look back and say, well, he was evaluating guys correctly in the draft process?
I mean, well, he's not doing the draft. Like, he doesn't draft. Like, go listen to the Chandler Rome podcast with that, like, scouting director post draft. Dana's not handling the draft.
Then you can move on. If he's not doing it,
overseeing it. Like, he's not at all handling it. They were like, well, he likes to go look at the guy that we might draft in the first round. He wants to lay eyes on the guy that we might pick in the first round. So he, like, wants to do that. He's not involved in the draft process.
Do you think he's going to be back?
Yes. I think they'll both be back. I think Dana will be back. Ooh. I think Joe Espada will be back. I think they'll both be back. Yes.
I do not think Joe Espada will be back.
Really?
I think they're going to make a change.
Who do you think it's going to be?
Brad Ausmus.
Gross.
Yep.
Now, if it's Brad Ausmus, then I want nothing to do with that. And now, if it's A.J. Hinch, I'm all in.
Why?
Like, what?
Why?
What do you mean, why?
He just blew the biggest division lead in the history of baseball.
Okay, that's back of baseball card. Who do you trust more in the dugout for the Astros next year?
Back of his baseball card.
Brad Ausmus or A.J. Hinch?
A.J. Hinch.
Okay,
is that
Greinke
on the mound? Because I'll give
Mike
Brad
dropped.
Ausmus.
You're taking Ausmus over A.J. Hinch?
I was making a joke. If Zach Greinke's on the mound, I'll take Brad Ausmus.
I feel like that's – if they're going to move on from Joe Espada, like, are they going to give the keys to Dana Brown to make the decision? Because I'm not sure they're going to do that either.
I think Dana would, I think if Dana were making the decision, he would keep Espada.
But that's to me, that's what matters the most, is whatever decision is made, it has to be in lockstep. Like, it can't be Dana Brown's the GM and the guy that you've interviewed to be your GM multiple times, the guy you've interviewed to be your manager multiple times, who, when you could have just named Joe Espada the manager after Dusty Baker retired, like, you could have just gave it to Joe Espada. They were talking to Brad Ausmus. It was widely reported. The name keeps coming up.
But I mean, well, it comes up because he's tied with Bagwell.
Exactly.
And, like, he was the runner-up. Like, he did get it over us. I mean, he was next in line if they didn't go to Espada. But they went to Espada. Like, I don't think it's going to be Ausmus. I would be very, very disappointed if Brad Ausmus were the next manager of the Houston Astros. I'd rather have Espada over Ausmus. If they move on from Espada, it better be a manager that I like. Which I would take A.J. Hinch back in a heartbeat. I trust A.J. Hinch. I know that he had a terrible moment in the 2019 World Series, which we all, you know, disagree with him. I think he should have left Greinke into the game as well. If not Greinke, maybe Cole. But at the same time, that's in the past. Like, or that's you hiring somebody because of the back of their baseball card. I always go with the trust thing. Who do you trust to lead you to success the most? Brad Ausmus, Joe Espada, A.J. Hinch.
A.J.
No-brainer. It's A.J. Hinch.
It's a total no-brainer.
And then the point that you brought up about, like, leading the Tigers to the biggest collapse, whatever, that's why he could be available. If he didn't do that, he wouldn't be available. They would have locked him up to an extension last week. Mm-hmm. If he would have clinched the division. Like, their collapse is your gain. This is your opportunity to strike. Now, I do think that they probably need to lose to the Guardians in the wild card round because you're going to want to make some decisions prior to that. I didn't realize the press conference was there tomorrow, so that kind of makes things tricky as well. The press conference makes me think Espada is going to be back. But, and again, I'm not calling for either one of their heads, but there are a lot of general managers and a lot of managers that are out there that I would want to be shepherding the Astros organization over the next few years that I think would give the organization a better chance of finding their recent success over the duo that you currently have.
I totally agree. It's just, I just don't know if they're going to, I just don't know which direction they're going to go in. Like, if they're going to keep these guys, I'm not sure it makes sense. I would rather them move on from both of them, frankly, than keep one of them. I think it should be,
same.
Like, I think you either just keep both of them or you get rid of both of them. I don't want to play the middle game. I don't like when teams do that. I think it's poor handling. I think you should typically have a new GM. And if you're not going to have a new GM, then Dana Brown has to get a contract extension to match up with the new manager.
I agree with that.
My concern is with the Ausmus stuff, is that he's around and that it's going to be a Crane and Bagwell hire, not a Dana Brown hire. In this situation, that's what I just don't know if they're going to hand the keys to him and say, you go find the manager that you think fits this team the best.
Yeah. No, I think that they both stay, but I wouldn't keep either one, even though I'm not calling for their heads. 713-780-3776. We'll get your thoughts on this. Dana Brown on Espada. Nightingale had some thoughts on Dana Brown. How about the roster? Like, what are those steps? We're going to put together an offseason plan tomorrow, but there's a couple things that I'm thinking about that you got to make the decision before you start planning for what the roster is going to look like. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This weekend, Saturday the 4th and Sunday, October 5th, is Oktoberfest at the Kima Boardwalk. It's a free event to the public to attend and walk around, and beer tickets, beer signs, and food tickets can be purchased right now online or at the event. They have plenty of beers from Bell's Oktoberfest to Voodoo Ranger, Yingling Oktoberfest, Sam Adams Oktoberfest. All the beer that you'll want will be there this weekend. Plus, they have a ton of events going on Saturday and Sunday. They'll have a cornhole tournament on Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 8. They'll have DJ both days, live music from 6 to 10 on Saturday, from 5 to 9 on Sunday. And you can go check out Sean Mapes and Brian McDonald this Saturday from noon to 2. Check out the full schedule of events for Oktoberfest at the Kima Boardwalk at kimaboardwalk.com.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Yeah, I would call Jeff Luno and see, hey, you want to put that soccer stuff behind you? You can just be owner in those? I mean, he'll never do it. Crane would never, ever do that. Too prideful. Luno sued you. He's not going to do that. If I do it, click too. Click. I'm sorry the way that we handled that after the World Series, but we would love to have you back. I would call both of those guys and see if they would take the job back.
How would you feel? What if they called AJ and offered him the GM spot instead of the manager spot?
I don't know if he would do that. I don't know if he would give up being in the dugout. I think he likes it too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to entertain the question, I'd be okay with that too.
Because at least, it's a guy who's been part of the process before, right? He's still involved on a day-to-day. Though that's quite a large shadow to have over your current manager. I mean, every call and text and tweet and social media posts is going to be about AJ taking back over. So, like, it's a pretty large shadow to put over your current manager, whoever you end up hiring, even if it was still a spot as. When can AJ just move down? It's like Pat Riley with the Heat back in the day when LeBron first just got there. So, I would be – I'm open to the idea, but I do generally think you're correct that he would probably prefer to be a manager instead of a GM.
I think so. Like, I don't know that with any – you know, certainty, but I get the vibe that he likes to be in the dugout more than he likes to be in the front office. I remember whenever the Astros hired Brown, that Hinch's name was thrown out there, as the general manager before they hired Brown. Now, I've also been told Crane loves Hinch. Like, Crane loves Hinch, and Hinch has two homes in Houston. Like, if he became available, I think the Astros would be interested. But if they hold a press conference tomorrow, that's going to not allow that to happen, I think.
I don't know about that.
So they could have an end-of-season press conference with your GM and manager and then fire your manager the next week?
I think we've seen crazier things happen.
Have we?
Did James Click not do an end of the season?
No, they fired him after the parade.
Oh, no, I think you're right. Yep.
Like, they're not going to do an end-of-season presser and then get fired, in my opinion. I really don't think so.
So if the news were to come out that one of them is being moved on from, we'll probably know
today. And then if they're both gone, it'll be Crane or Bagwell. Bagwell will hold the presser.
Gosh,
which he likes to be in the back of those rooms anyways, holding pressers after the presser.
I mean, he's been gone for a while. Like, we haven't really seen him be doing that.
No, he hadn't. He's kind of taken a step back after Dana Brown got his, you know, I guess got his feet wet.
Yeah, after the analytics comment that he made to the reporters when he wasn't supposed to be available to the media, that they don't believe in analytics, he's kind of gone silent. But yeah, it says media advisory, Dana Brown and manager Joe Espada will be available tomorrow at 11 a.m.
I think that's your decision. I think the decision's already been made. I think they're bringing both back.
Unless one's not there.
Yeah, I think both are back, which does I don't love. I really don't. I don't think that that's the duo that I have the most faith in to guide you back to where you want to be. I truly don't. Seven, not that they deserve to be fired, but there are a lot of GM manager pairings that I would have a lot more confidence in. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Willie, you're in the junkyard. What's up, Willie?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, about Dana Brown, you know, I never did like him. So if he, you know, I hate to see a man lose his job, but if he loses his job, I'm not going to cry for him. But if they do keep him, I hope they let the manager make out the lineup card, because I don't think he know what he's doing. I think they've got Sanchez. He had no business in the lineup on Friday. You know, going 2 for 35 in an important series like that. And I didn't like how he brought back Paredes when at the expense of Caratini. If they keep him, I hope they get a manager that can make out the lineup card, because I think he was just using people he went and traded for instead of the people that got us over, not well, got the team over up to 20 games over 500. And, you know, at least my pocket's a little fat. Thank you.
Thanks, Willie. I don't think, to the point of the lineup, I don't think with the way the Astros organization operates that if Dana Brown's the one really putting together the lineup card, that that's going to necessarily change with a new GM. That they're going to use an analytical approach, and if that's Yordan Alvarez batting second, that's going to continue. So, unfortunately, Willie, I don't think that's going to change no matter who is here.
No, it's not. I don't really disagree with Willie. I feel like a lot of – like, and I'm pro-analytics mostly. I kind of agree with Bagwell that we've gone a little too far with a lot of these things. Now, to be ignorant to it's silly. I think that's kind of dumb. But I do think the manager should have the lineup card. I think he should have the final say. Like, come together, do your meetings, do your lineup meetings. These are the numbers, like all of that. But ultimately, I think that the manager should be the one making the call on the final starting nine. They know the club. They know who needs days off. They know who's slumping better than anybody else. I agree with Willie on that part. 713-780-ESPN text line. We'll get to the text line in our next segment. What about the roster? Well, I'm going to come up with an off-season plan. I don't want to force work onto you, Joe. But I'm going to have an off-season plan out tomorrow. Okay. I've been thinking about it a little bit. I wanted to kind of wait until tomorrow because I feel like it's a better tomorrow topic. But the things that I'm kind of kicking around, where does Jose Altuve play next year?
Oh, that's a great question.
Like, is he your second baseman or is he your left fielder DH with Yordan?
I think it's in the best interest of the Astros, again, if he is your left fielder DH. And I think Jeremy, because I think it's in the best interest for the Astros if he's just your DH. I'd rather see Yordan Alvarez, even though he can't stay healthy, in left field. I think he's a better left fielder. I don't really trust Jose Altuve out there. I know it wasn't a total disaster this year, but I don't think he should be playing second base next season unless it's in a extreme emergency situation. The team was better without him out there. The defense and the infield was better. So I would say DH as much as humanly possible, but if you don't want to have Yordan in left because of all the injuries, then Altuve is your left fielder next season.
So we're eliminating second base completely?
I would like to.
Okay.
Urias more than I like Altuve there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what position Jose Altuve plays the most in 2026.
I think that semi depends on what they do this offseason, though, right?
Well, don't you have to decide before you make moves?
Sure, but I'm saying as far as us getting the answers to what it's going to be, like part of why he moved back to second base is we just realized that their best offensive lineup meant he had to play second base. So depending on what they do this offseason, that'll be the question they have to answer themselves before they make this move.
Well, but I'm trying to make decisions tomorrow, Brian. I'm asking the question now. I don't have the luxury of waiting.
I think it has to be your left fielder.
Yeah.
I think it's where I'm leaning. I'm just going to have Altuve and Yordan share left field DH.
Can I ask, where are you putting – is Christian Walker on your roster right now?
That's the second question I have. The second question that I have for myself and you guys, how much of the salary are you willing to retain before you just say, screw it, I'm keeping Christian Walker?
I would just get rid of him. Frankly?
So you would eat 15 of his 20 million?
Yeah.
I think that's foolish.
Why?
Because you've had tons of injuries. Isak Paredes is playing on a hamstring that might need to be surgically repaired. And if it's not, it's hanging on by a thread. Carlos Correa hasn't played in 162 games in his entire life. Jeremy Pena is a muscle hamster that missed 35 games. That's why. I like death. Did you not just live this season full of injuries?
I know, but like I don't want him out there.
You can't Jose Abreu him. You can't just cut your losses and get
nothing. Call the Twins back.
Well, that's why I asked you what number are you comfortable trading to just trade him? Because like I think my number is $10 million. Like if I can shed $10 million trading Walker, which means you retain $10 million, I would do that. But I'm not going over that. I'm not paying $10,100,000 to trade Christian Walker away. Because look, Isak Paredes could be a ticking time bomb with that hamstring. He might need off-season surgery for all we know.
I think that's one of the most important questions that should be asked of Dana Brown tomorrow is Isak Paredes having off-season surgery? Because
yeah.
It does dictate everything. Because
it does.
Because it factors into the Jose Altuve conversation. Because if he doesn't need to have surgery and he'll just heal and you want to stick with Walker because you don't want to eat the money, you could put Paredes at second base.
I disagree completely. Why? I don't think Isak's a second baseman. I completely disagree.
But where else is he going to play if you're not going to eat the money on Walker?
He's going that you're in trouble. I don't think he play. I don't think he's capable of playing second. He had these questions before. He had multiple hamstring injuries this year.
I agree, but like, I don't know how they're putting this roster together.
He'll have to be your DH. He'll have to be your DH. I think there's a better chance of Altuve playing second base than Isak playing second base.
So Altuve second base potentially. Paredes DH.
He's your DH / third baseman, first baseman. Like, I mean, obviously you're not doing the same nine. Like the Astros had 154 unique lineups this year. Like we get too caught up in these are the nine because that nine isn't going to play more than 10 times together. So like Isak would be like your opening day DH, Yordan in left, Altuve at second. But then Isak would play games at third to get Correa days off. Plus Correa is going to get hurt. That's probably the truth. He would play a lot of first base to get Walker days off, especially if he's slumping. So like Isak could get hurt. That's obviously on the table as well. So that's why I think you have to figure out a number that you're willing to eat on Walker where you're not willing to cross. Because I like depth. I saw what this season looked like. I wouldn't. And look, Walker led you in homers and in RBIs. His road numbers were good. Like, there's some things that are, like, okay about Walker. So my number is 10. Like, if I'm not saving $10 million, I'm just going to go ahead and keep him.
I would be. I think 10's a good number. Like, if would you be open to the idea of taking a flyer if you like someone's stuff, but you think you can fix it from a starter, like another team's trash for your trash? Like, it's just like a salary exchange, but you're betting on your pitching staff fixing the pitcher versus being able to fix Christian Walker. Would you take that risk?
So same salary?
Yeah, relative same salary.
So you have a starter that – is it a starter or a reliever?
Starter.
Okay. So you have a guy who could potentially be in your rotation, $20 million 1 year for Walker, $20 million 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it depends on Isak. But if you think that Isak's going to be fine by opening day and he can handle first base, then I would do that, yeah. But it can't be more than a – well, Walker's got 20 each for two more years.
That, see, that's where, like, if you could find a pitcher who's worth, like, $20 million for a year and move on from Walker, then you have
some salary.
This guy for 1 year, and then you clear up for 2027. Like,
yeah,
that could be a win-win for
you. Now, if Isak's not healthy, and I have a good idea he's not going to be healthy by opening day, then I wouldn't do that. Like, it kind of comes down to Isak's hamstring.
Like, could you, like would you take Severino?
I don't know his salary.
He makes $20 million.
For one more year?
No, he's got 2 years left, though. That's the problem.
I think he does have 2 years left.
Yeah. I mean, I would absolutely do that, but the A's wouldn't.
No.
They kind of have a good first baseman already.
Yeah, that's true. There's really nowhere for him to play there.
I'd have to look around at teams and, like, look at potential fits. Severino was really good on the road.
I would be – I mean, that's the kind of player you're talking about here. Like, Eduardo Rodriguez makes $20 million. Jose Berrios makes $19 million. Giolito, I mean, the Red Sox aren't going to move on. They're going to miss him in the playoffs, or at least for this round at least. But Michael Wacha, like, those are the players that you're kind of in the price range of that are at least this year making $20 million. Some of those might be free agents. But
yeah, I mean, I'd have to see the name specifically. But if Isak's not good to go, I can't do that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Because what are you doing then? Well, like, what would be your plan then? Because Caratini's a free agent, which a lot of textures are saying re-sign Caratini, which I don't know. I don't know if you re-sign Caratini. Like, do you want to re-sign Caratini and have two bad defensive catchers on your team?
No, like, but that's not the one I'm getting rid of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hesitant there, too. But, I mean, yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Thomas, you're in the junkyard. What's up, Thomas?
How y'all doing, guys? I wanted to propose – I don't know if I'm adding on to y'all's conversation or opening up a different pathway, but – so when Dana Brown came over, I was under the impression he was more of like a scouting, you know, talent development kind of GM, or that's the role he played with the Braves. With the disappointment of this year and realizing that we can't just keep plugging away with bad contracts and just trading for, you know, plug guys or whatever, is this kind of the reset that we can have and just know that we do have depth, we have quality both in pitching and in the, you know, lineup, just health was, you know, a big bummer this year and stuff, and just focus on just redeveloping our farm system and then knowing, you know, in the next few years, like, we're going to maybe be an above average team, but maybe not be able to compete, and we're going to have to pick those battles year in, year out now to redevelop our farm system. That was just my proposal. I'll hang up and listen.
I mean, quick hang up. That was a quick trigger on that hang up. Did you hear how fast he hung up?
Hey, he's ready to
hang up. He was eager to hang up. He didn't want to be on the phone with us any longer.
I'm open to the idea. I just don't think they should approach the idea of doing a soft rebuild if they're going to do it. Like, because you're talking about Yiner, Pena, Hunter Brown, right? Like, if you're going to rebuild your farm system, those are your assets. Jake Meyer is probably included in that. Like, you're not getting anything for Correa, like, or Paredes or Christian Walker. Like, you're not getting, maybe Paredes if he's healthy, but like, you're not getting value in terms of resetting your farm system from trading those guys. Like, those aren't that's where, if you're going to do it, it's going to have to get ugly, I think. Unfortunately, it's going to be the older guys and prospects. And I don't know if they're going to be willing to do that or if it's the right time. Like, they did have a ton of injuries and ended up with the exact same record as the Tigers and missed the playoffs by a game, by a tiebreak.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to fully go on the idea that they're going to do a full-on teardown. I'm open to it. But I just think if you're going to do it, I think you have to push all your chips in and really head in that direction.
Yeah, I think that they already missed their opportunity to do this. And I usually get criticized for this a lot. I would have traded the players that were leaving in free agency before they entered their walk year. I would have made the Kyle Tucker trade with almost every single Astro that they let leave in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I would have done it with Bregman. I would have done it with Correa. I would have done it with Springer. Cole's a little different because you only had him for 2 years. I think that good organizations should always do that. If you're not willing to spend top dollar to lock them up, I think that they missed that opportunity. I think they're in this kind of minor league system purgatory. They're not going to trade those players for prospects to rebuild the system. So you kind of have to you have to be better than everybody else at drafting, quite frankly, because you're hanging on to the veterans. And then you're drafting late in the rounds because you've been a winning organization. So it's tough. It's tough. You're going to have to outproduce the other organizations when it comes to drafting, international signings, and player development. You're going to be in the spot that you are. Or you have to trade veterans, which Jim Crane's not going to do that.
You don't think the Kyle Tucker trade like opens the door a little bit?
The Kyle Tucker trade feels to me like a one-off.
Okay.
It feels like, okay, let's get under the competitive balance tax. This is a way of doing it. Let's get something for a player before he leaves, but we're not going to do it with Fromber. We're only going to do it with Tucker. So, like, it's not consistent with anything that Crane has done in his ownership, and it's really not that consistent with anything that Dana Brown has done. And, look, Dana Brown really didn't operate the first offseason. He's only had two offseasons, really. He had more than one opportunity to do this. He could have done it with Tucker. He did. He could have done it with Fromber. He didn't. He could have done it with Bregman. He didn't. So two out of three of the times, he didn't do it.
And that's why, like, I would have traded Fromber. Honestly, like, if you're going to do the Tucker thing, like, and that's where, like, again, this offseason, like, but if you're going to go with this approach, you have to go all in. Like, I don't have the organizational philosophy.
Like, yeah, they really don't.
Like, that's why, and they did for a while, which was just let guys walk, and that was their plan. But it felt like the Tucker one opened the door, but they're not going to walk all the way through it. And that's what I don't like about the approach.
Would you have traded Fromber? I would have traded Fromber in the offseason. That said, I can withhold that thought depending on what I get in return. Because I do have a theory that Dana Brown shopped Fromber. Because remember the winter meetings, he's like, everybody's got a price. Mm-hmm. So I do think that they shopped Fromber and didn't like the return, which, okay, hang on to the guy. Like, if you're getting 50% of the dollar for a guy that's going to be one of your top two starters, then you better hang on to him. Fromber still led the Astros in innings this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as bad as he still was your inning leader, and that matters. Like, eating inning matters. So, yeah. It's going to be a very interesting offseason because they have a surplus of position players. They have a surplus of number five starters. They have a need for middle of the rotation starters and probably bullpen.
Bullpen? Yeah, I would say probably bullpen. But they also have a need for a top end starter because as much as Fromber was frustrating this year, specifically towards the back end of the season, besides that last final start, you have to replace him. I don't want Fromber back, and I know he's interested. You can't just go into next season without someone to replace Fromber Valdez, and that's not Spencer Arregui. That's not Christian Javier. You have to replace that player with something of quality.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said middle of the rotation starter. Like, I just don't know if you can acquire your sub ace, you know? Like, I don't think that there's many of those guys walking around that are attainable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you need to spend every dollar you have on pitching. Probably at least one starter, maybe two. 713-780-3776. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line. Israel, you're in the junkyard. What's up, Israel?
What's up? Hey, man. I think Joe jumped the gun on my guy, man. You know how I feel. You know what I'm saying? About Big Cam, man. Killer Cam. He got my guy, Santo. He got Santos. He started playing him. He had a 5-hit game, and he overrode him, man. Cam ended up right now with runners in scoring position. He's second on the team with his limited role. He is second on the team right now, and he benched him for Santos, man. And with the injuries,
Israel, who is Santos?
I mean, a Sanchez.
I got you.
You know what I mean? Jesus. He shouldn't have benched him so long for this guy. He had a five-hit game and did rob a couple people, you know what I'm saying? But he also had a lot of errors, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Cam, I don't know if he's still in the running for the Golden Glove in right field.
Nah.
But for him to go to right field from third base and don't have an error is phenomenal. And he should have never put him on the bench that long. But let me tell you guys something else about my boy CJ. CJ back, you know what I mean, he's going to do his thing, and they still is going to win the AFC.
Israel, South. Cam Smith had two errors this year.
Huh?
Cam Smith had two errors this year.
Okay, he had two. Okay, great. People thought he would be worse than that. He had two errors. I didn't see that.
Well, it's just different than the zero that you said. That's why I brought it up. No, I think he's a good right fielder.
Buddy, how about his war, buddy? Is it 1.9, buddy?
His 1.9?
It was 1.9.
What is his war?
1.9.
Oh, okay, yeah, his war. He was still the best outfielder they had, buddy. So get that right.
He was.
They're going to build off the camp. They're going to build off the camp. They pitching got a little hurt. They're going to get a couple more pitches, and they be back in the game again. I don't know if Joe needs to get up out of there or not. You know what I'm saying? But, hey, I almost said something to you, but, you know, it is what it is. Big shot down in the building, Joe.
Jake Myers had a 2.5 war.
Is he talking about me or Joe Spada?
Israel, you still there?
No, he hung up. I was honestly unsure that myself.
I can't tell.
I thought it was a Spada, but then at the end, it kind of seemed like it turned to you.
Like, is he talking about me or is he talking about Joe Spada? We're going to need some clarification if we'll call in to complain.
Is this station going to have a press conference tomorrow morning?
Dubon had a 1.8 war.
About how the Astros should have traded for Matt Shaw or Kate Morgan instead of Cam Smith? We can do that. That'd be fine.
No, Matt Shaw misses playoff games or important games down the stretch.
That's true.
I really enjoyed all the misinformation that Israel just fed us.
I like that because before, like for months, we would hear about Cam's batting average, to the point where it dipped into the 240s. But now the goalpost has been completely moved. Now we're talking about runners in scoring position.
And this makes me feel like we're going anti-Cam Smith. No one's anti-Cam Smith.
It's just anti his argument.
Yeah,
it's really.
Cam Smith was second.
It's not even
on the
anti-Israel
Astros
for me. It's just anti the way he argues his point.
He was second on the Astros in strikeouts. Cam Smith. Let's see.
Even being benched for a large part.
Where else can I cherry pick anti-Cam Smith number? 236 average was only better. Oh wait, no, it was the worst batting average for a regular on the Astros. That 236 average that Israel liked to point to. 236 was worse than Yiner. It was worse than Christian Walker. Walker finished at 238. Cam Smith at 236. Look, I think Cam Smith had a fine rookie season. Sanchez was terrible down the stretch, too. I don't really disagree a whole lot with Israel. Like, I think that Cam Smith should have had some starts against righties when Jesus Sanchez was in those struggles. So I really don't disagree a whole lot with what he said. It's more the misinformation that stood out to me. Had the highest war of any Astro outfielder. He was less than Jake Myers. Zero errors. He had two. Moving the goalposts with certain statistical categories. But the way Cam Smith finished the year, though, like, I'm not as bullish on Cam Smith as I was in early July. The strikeouts are insane. Mm-hmm. He was terrible since the end of July.
Do we still think he's
the start of July? Actually,
do we still think he's a foundational piece?
If it's Dana Brown, yes. Dana Brown ain't gonna.
I'm not asking
Cam
Dana
Smith.
Brown though. I'm asking you and Joe.
I think he'll be an everyday guy. I think that he's
that
learned a lot.
That's different to me than foundational, though.
Foundational?
Because Jake Myers was an everyday guy even when he wasn't good.
It's hard to tell off a rookie season. Like, Aaron Judge's rookie year, like, wasn't fantastic. Kyle Tucker was terrible as a rookie. So I think it's too early to say. But I thought early July, whenever he was, like, on fire, like, 800 OPS, nearly 300 batting average, like, okay. Yeah, Dana Brown cooked. He finished poorly.
Yeah, I would have liked to see the adjustment. Because that's my concern with Cam Smith. It's like, once the book was written on him, I feel like he couldn't pivot back, and I think that goes back to a lot of people's complaints about the hitting coaches on this team. And even though we saw, you know, Jake Myers and Jeremy Peña have big years, like, where was the – we didn't see that adjustment from Cam Smith.
I think
that's where, like, when we were doing the podcast, Jeremy, like, I think there was reason to send Cam Smith down.
Oh, they should have. Dana Brown screwed that up.
Yeah.
They should have sent him down.
just the reset. And now he's got to reset in the offseason. I still have a lot of hope for Cam Smith, but to where it was, and to your point, in July versus to where it finished, was it's definitely a disappointing season for him.
After Cam Smith's high water mark was like 805 OPS, like after the first Dodger game, his final 60 games, 206 plate appearances, 181 at-bats, he slashed 155 average, 248 on base, 232 slug. Added up, 480 OPS. He was abysmal in his final 60 games. Abysmal. He was a disaster. There's no other way to put it. 713-780-3776. What do you want the Astros to do this offseason? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. With that slash line, if I had that slash line, I'd be out to Creech Crossing Resort in a hurry. I'd be trying to forget about that slash line so quick. And I could do that at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Why? Because that's where you can enjoy great rest and great relaxation. They're the place to be. They're always the place to be. Love me some Two Creeks Crossing Resort. And right now, you can get 20% off your stay through October. I mean, we're starting to see a little bit of fall weather. If you're out early this morning, maybe before the sun came up, you got to feel a little bit of that fall weather. And what better place to be than Two Creeks Crossing Resort to really take it all in whenever it gets crisp, when the leaves start to turn? Get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort. From the open green spaces, wildlife, beautiful majestic trees, some of the best fishing in Texas. They got the two creeks. They got the catch and release pond in the middle of the property, which is great for the kiddos. They're the place to be. Hike their 92 acres of property, kayak their waters, play some pickleball, hang out by the pool with a drink. It's so much fun. And it's only 90 minutes from Houston. You can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You're going to get rest and relaxation without traveling for 10 hours. You're going to get rest and relaxation without hopping on an airplane and having to travel most of the day, waking up at 3:30 in the morning to catch that early a.m. flight. You don't want to do any of that. If you're trying to just get away, get some peace and quiet, get some rest and relaxation, you don't want to blow all that time traveling. So Two Creeks Crossing Resort is the place to do it. And they're always taking care of their visitors as well. Thirsty Thursdays every Thursday, Frozen Fridays every Friday. They play a little bingo on Saturday. That's fun. This Saturday, for instance, they're having a peek out weekend. A pink out weekend. That'd be great. College football at Swampers on Saturdays, too. You're going to have a great time out at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. So book that stay now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Israel's mad at me. He's accusing me of taking pills and popping Percocet. Oh, man, I take it as a compliment. Texture, Tucker was abysmal until year 3, 4. Cam will be just fine. I think he will be, too. I think it's a fair question, though, on whether or not they ruined Cam. Like, the Astros did something that's pretty unprecedented with Cam Smith, at least in, like, this era of baseball, where you have that few of games in the minors and that few of at-bats in the minors, and then you're called immediately up to the big leagues. And there is worry that whenever you move a guy that quickly, that you can ruin that guy. Did the Astros ruin Cam Smith? It's on the table.
I think, yeah.
That's all I'm saying. It's on the table.
Yeah, it's how does he look next year, I think, will be a big, you know, indicator of that. I think it's too early to answer the question, but it is on the table. I mean, you're right. It's so extreme. Like, we don't see players get drafted that early, specifically position players. Pitchers we've seen come up quickly, but we don't see, you know, position players. Even like Garrett Crochet, I mean, he came up right after he was drafted, and he was a bullpen arm. You know, he's not the guy he is today for the Boston Red Sox. But like, when the White Sox called him up, he was pitching one inning in a playoff push. Like, he wasn't doing what Cam Smith was doing this year. So it's pretty extreme. I think it's It's a fair question to ask.
Yeah. Texter, wasn't Aaron Judge second in MVP voting his rookie year? He was. I should have said his first season and not his rookie year because it's confusing in baseball because if you get less than like 110 plate appearances, you don't lose your rookie status. So Judge, technically, his rookie year did win rookie of the year and was second in MVP voting. His first year in the bigs, though, was 16, where he had 95 plate appearances, almost lost his rookie status, but didn't quite. And he slashed 179, 263, 345.
Ooh.
So, like, it takes a while for young players to really find it. So I'm not writing Cam Smith off. But the way that Cam Smith finished, which was abysmal, makes you have worry. There's no doubt about it. Now, am I penciling him in as my everyday right fielder right now, opening day? Of course I am. Of course I am. He's going to get a chance. He'll have an opportunity, and I hope that he figures it all out. I hope he makes that adjustment that Joe was talking about. And I still think he will. But it's in play. They could have ruined him by calling him up too quickly. Fire Espada, Brown, and Cinchon, injuries or not. The team's at times looks atrocious at the plate. Look back at 18, Tucker. You'll feel better about Cam's future. Tucker was booty cheeks with a beautiful swing. He also adjusted that swing. Tucker first, not his rookie year, but his first year in the bigs, hit 141 with a 236 on base and a 203 slug. That was 72 plate appearances, 64 at-bats. He was much better his next year, but
I think it's also it's a big assumption that just because Tucker did it, that Cam Smith is also going to do it.
Yeah,
like that's a pretty big leap. You know, one of the most consistent hitters in regular season for Kyle Tucker, for Cam Smith to go, well, yeah, he wasn't good, and he can do exactly what Tucker did or similar to what Tucker did, make you feel better. It's apples to oranges for me.
Get something for Yiner, re-sign Caratini. I think this is the camp that you're in. My fear here, Joe, is that Caratini's free. So, like, it depends on when you re-sign Caratini or sign a catcher. Because I'm not trading Yiner before I have some like, I'm pretty sure what my plan is. In fact, I'm going to go a step further than that. I need to be more than pretty sure what my plan is going to be. I need something locked in. Like, if your idea is to trade Yiner, okay, cool. But you better sign Caratini before you trade Yiner. Because if you trade Yiner and you don't sign another catcher or your starting catcher next season, your catcher one in your organization will be Cesar Salazar. So I'm not necessarily opposed to trading Yiner. I think I'm leaning on the side of not trading Yiner. I'm not opposed to it, though. I'm kind of on the fence here. I'm on Taos Hill here when it comes to this one. But if you're going to do that, you have to lock up a catcher before you do it.
Yeah, because Walker's not ready, right?
No, he didn't get promoted to Double A.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even close. So, yeah, it's you can't just go into next year and be like, yeah, we're trying to sign a catcher in the offseason. I don't really know what your pivot is if you don't have Caratini locked up. Would you be open to the idea of finally trying Yiner at first?
Okay, well, what is that scenario? You trade Walker and Esox what?
Your DH, like we were talking about earlier?
Yeah. No, I think my plan would be that Yiner would be my plan B at first base if I trade Walker and Esox there, but I'm worried about the hamstring. Like, you could do that. You could re-sign Caratini. You go into the year, Yiner, Caratini are my catchers. My first baseman, because I traded Walker, is Esox. And then my backup first baseman, if Esox's hamstring gets blown out of proportion again, is one of those guys. Mm-hmm. I think that would be that scenario. Which I don't hate.
Yeah, I don't know what the – I'm just not – I think, like, if you're going to move on from someone, I think Yiner is the most logical decision, frankly. Like, I don't think you're moving on from Pena. I don't think you're moving on from Hunter Brown. Like, it's if you're going to reload your farm system or – and it's not even a farm system for me. It's more acquiring a starting pitcher. Like, that's why I'm moving on from Yiner. I'm not just moving on from Yiner just because. I would only do it if you're acquiring someone that's going to help you replace Fromber. Not to that level, probably.
Yeah.
But someone that's going to elevate your rotation in a way in which you probably can't do in free agency because of financials or whatever. Yeah. That's why I would trade Yiner, or what I would be looking for to make.
No, I hear you. No, I hear you on. No, I know you're not giving them away. Like, you're doing it to acquire a top of the rotation starter, which I hear you on that. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's get to some of the top NFL games yesterday. Colts, did they lose to the Rams or did they lose to themselves? Liam Cohen and Saleh facing off after the game over some sign stealing. And how about the game ending in a tie, huh? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN.
97.5.